News Talk Breakfast.
In association with AIR. Do anything, anywhere with high-speed 4G mobile data coverage across 96% of the population.
This is News Talk.
Our panel is here. We're going to take a look at the Sunday newspapers, the headlines making today's papers. Delighted to be joined in studio by News Talk's very own reporter, Stephen Murphy, and also Gráinne Nié. She's a reporter with the Journal. You're both very welcome to the programme.
Morning, Bobby.
Thanks very much for joining us, folks. We might start with you, Gráinne. The Sunday Business Post: insurers feel the heat over rocketing premiums as injury awards fall. There's been a lot of insurance stories over the weekend. We had again, I don't know if you saw yesterday, the withdrawal of the playground insurance from the marketplace. Now we have another report from the Department of Justice, and it appears that the insurance industry is anything but transparent.
Well, this is a story by Peter O'Dwyer, and it's basically saying that the claims that insurance companies have been making, that the reason why premiums are so high is because A, B and C, one of those reasons doesn't seem to stand up. So it's a report based on a report by the Department of Justice that found that the total amount awarded for personal injury payouts between 2013 and 2017 dropped by 9.1%. But insurance companies have been saying that these have been increasing, and we have to raise premiums because of this. Just to put that into perspective onto that, CSO figures show that motor insurance rose by 70% over that similar period to that.
So 70% increase and a 9% decrease.
So even if you give a bit of leeway in those figures,
that's crazy.
It's completely different. So the Sunday Business Post reports that they spoke to the Justice or the Junior Finance Minister, Michael Darcy, who said that premiums need to drop immediately. This claim doesn't stand up. And we heard before that they were saying fraudulent claims were one of the reasons why increased premiums were happening, and that didn't seem to stand up in a rock this committee. So they're being asked repeatedly to, if you're making these claims, where are the figures to back them up? And this is just the latest story in that long, as you were saying, long line of scrutiny on the insurance sector.
It really is an industry, I think, that needs to look at itself. And did I see the responding to the report, Peter Boland? He's the Alliance for Insurance Reform director. He's called also on insurance to explain these rise in premiums and provide greater transparency over. But, you know, this is all just war of words stuff. Michael Darcy, you know, the junior finance minister coming out, you know, again, what is he doing about it? How can we hold these businesses to account?
Well, Fine Gael have been trying to clamp down on this. And then the Maria Bailey incident happened, and it's actually put more pressure on them to do something, because you can't on the one hand say we're doing something about it, that scandal happened, and then continue to pay lip service. So I feel like that's there's a limited amount of time for how much just talking the government can do on this. And they seem to want to do something about it as well.
All right. Well, that's on the front page of the Sunday Business Post, if you're interested in that. Stephen, Simon Coveney, he's written an editorial in the Sunday Times. It's on page 9. It sort of seems to be hidden within the paper. I would have thought this was because we heard Adrian Harmon there. It was his main news line this morning. But this seems to be buried on page 9 in the Sunday Times.
Yeah, it's actually the main story in the UK version, but I suppose the Ireland edition believed that, I don't know, maybe it's not worthy of being front page news, because essentially what Simon Coveney is doing here is restating the position that he's had for quite a long time. So obviously we know it's going to be a big week in the UK. We expect that Boris Johnson will take over as British Prime Minister, that he'll be elected on Tuesday. And, you know, this is really Simon Coveney sending a message to Boris Johnson or Jeremy Hunt that really, from the Irish government's perspective, nothing has really changed. So he's saying that we will work closely with the new Prime Minister to advance our shared interests, especially safeguarding peace on the island. But he's saying that while the personality in Downing Street won't change this week, the facts and complexity relating to Brexit remain the same. And he's really saying that, you know, the backstop, there's been so much talk about that, Boris Johnson saying that it's dead, but, you know, Simon Coveney here, and we've heard from the EU as well, saying that the deal that's on the table isn't really going to change. change. The backstop, you know, unless something else comes along and replaces it, is kind of an essential part of any deal that they do. So they're saying that if Britain decides to leave without a deal, it would cause huge damage to us all. And Simon Coveney really sending a warning that, you know, no deal, which every side has been trying to avoid, will devastate the Northern Irish economy with tariffs and rules that will fundamentally disrupt the all-Ireland economy. So he's really saying that, you know, to Boris Johnson, the withdrawal agreement that we have right now is kind of the best thing that is on the table and something that is not up for renegotiation. So Simon Coveney, the EU have, you know, kind of consistently taken a strong line on this, and he's sort of saying that nothing really will change.
It's just a restatement of our red line, Europe's and our position. Gráinne, you've written a lot about Brexit. What do you make of this story?
Exactly that. All Ireland can do at this stage is continue to repeat its position. As that is a statement in itself to say we're not moving on that. It's a very significant the week before Johnson and Hunt kind of meet the final vote, because at the end of the day, they've both been talking about a very harsh kind of Brexit. They've both said the backstop needs not just to be changed, just to be taken out of the deal completely. And Simon Coveney is obviously coming out and saying you're going to have to face facts or face a very different reality when you take over.
Okay, let's move to another story which caught our eye. It's on the front page, staying with the Sunday Business Post. Drive-offs cost petrol stations $2 million in a year. Gráinne, this is a significant story, and I think significant really because this is an untalked, but retailers are very slow to talk about this, forecourt retailers, because they don't want to make the problem any worse. And there's also big fears around defamation cases out of this.
Tell me more. This is a great story because we've been talking about insurance premiums and Brexit, which are obviously always in the headlines. This is kind of a story that you wouldn't hear much about by Killian Woods in the Sunday Business Post. Basically, it's a report and sent to the Transport Minister Shane Ross that says petrol stations lose $2.5 million a year due to customers driving off. Now, that seems like a very high number for something that isn't, I suppose, policed. You know, you don't think about people looking out for that kind of thing. And added to that is probably another aspect to it is there's been a limited response from An Garda Síochána. The lobby group have said that the cases are reported to Gardaí, but in many cases the Gardaí are not interested in a case where they are seen to be a debt collector for the retail trade, which seems very harsh, because at the end of the day there are people whose jobs depend on these businesses.
I know a little bit about this business, but one thing I will tell you is if you go to somewhere like Junction 14 on the M7, they've actually changed their petrol pumps that you actually prepay with your card. Now, the old idea of a petrol retailer was to get your petrol and then you spend money. So they actually have decided in that forecourt to take the money up front and risk you driving off without spending anything. On the basis that that tells me that it's a very serious problem.
And if
you will choose to do that over trying to get somebody to spend additional retail in your shop, it's a serious problem.
There's actually another interesting line in it as well. Like you mentioned before, people don't want to talk about it, but the lobby group, the Irish Petrol and Retailers Association, their legal affairs manager said that retailers were also scared to tackle incidents of drive-offs in the heat of the moment due to defamation risks.
I was just going to get air in the tires.
Yeah, so there's another
another
reason for us to change those defamation laws.
Okay. Any thoughts on that, Stephen?
Yeah, I suppose clearly, like, it's a massive problem, and, you know, clearly petrol stations, I think 2 million a year, quite a stark figure.
It's about 2.5 grand per station, if you divide out the number of stations that we have. It's a lot of money.
It is a lot of money. And, you know, I suppose you wouldn't have thought it's as big a problem as clearly it is. So
when you think about 2,500 per station, how many people is that? If that's 50 euros, say, per vehicle, like, that's a lot of people doing it as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, well, we'll probably read more on that. What about the Sunday Times? Mark Tye has a nice piece on Gardaí tried to hack fans group. Stephen?
Yeah, so Mark Toye has kind of been their FAI man recently. Some brilliant stories. Another one today. But this story is about basically that he's writing that Gardaí tried to hack into a social media group used by Ireland football supporters last year. And it was basically over concerns that they were planning a protest against John Delaney, their former chief executive, the FAI's former chief executive. So this is correspondence sent by Joe McClue, the head of security for the FAI, to John Delaney last November. And it was basically talking about a protest WhatsApp group with about 12 members in it, and basically a warning that Gardaí were trying to hack into it. So it's basically, it's over a meeting that John Delaney was attending in the Shelbourne Hotel in Dublin. This is around the time of the Euro 2020 qualifier draw, and there was a UEFA meeting also being held at the same time. And it was basically setting out that the FAI provided up to 3 security men to shadow John Delaney during the day's events in Dublin, and that this guy, Joe McGlue, warning that there would be a very discreet presence by one bodyguard in the Shelbourne. So really just kind of cracking down on any sort of protest that might emerge against John Delaney. And there's kind of an interesting line in it as well about that. They're saying that he did not expect any planned activity, this Joe McClue, the head of security, but that there were plans in place to intercept any banners or flags of protest. The FAI now saying that they never asked for any WhatsApp group to be hacked, and the Gardaí, they've also issued a statement saying that it's not focused on any one individual, their relationship with the FAI. So I just suppose it highlights the lengths that they're going to. It's almost like a, you know, VIP, multi-billionaire, the security operation in place.
And just another problem for the FAI amidst the, and we're going to be talking to Dr. Niamh Brennan about the governance issues in the FAI a bit later on this morning.
As well, the contrast between the Gardaí not doing enough for petrol stations and then going to very extreme efforts.
Seems odd, doesn't it? Okay, what about Sunday Independent? Let's go there. Killer Quirk loses 132k on a property scheme. Interesting, there was talk during that trial about him being a, I suppose, a speculator, and that there was word that he had lost significant amount of money, but this seems to confirm that.
Yeah, I mean, will Patrick Quirk ever be out of the headlines? This is a story on the front page of the Sunday Independent by Maeve Sheehan, who reports that Patrick Quirk was a part of a syndicate of Irish farmers who invested 21 million in an office block in Warsaw. It was kind of a promoting Irish farming on a kind of commercial basis during the boom. And the investment on that, or the comeback on that investment, has came back last month. So out of the 140,000 that Quirk is believed to have invested, he's gotten back 8,400.
Not a great return.
No, you don't have to be very good at maths to know that that is not a good figure. So yeah, this is kind of, as you were saying, there's been other kind of hints that there's been other investments Quirk made in Warsaw in particular, and the details of that are further along in the story, and none of them make for very comforting reading. He lost a third of a 70 million investment in a 5.5 commercial property fund in Warsaw, and got 50,000 back from a 100,000 investment elsewhere. This is important, by the way. This isn't just kind of nosing around, because Bobby Ryan's two children, Robert and Michelle, that's the man that Patrick Quirk is convicted to have murdered, they are taking legal action against Patrick Quirk, because this is why this matters, because he was saying to have, you know, talked about all his assets, so that the land he has.
Yeah, there's going to need to be transparency of his assets, particularly if there's a settlement out of this. Yeah,
yeah,
that is very interesting. Okay, what about the Paddy Power founder, Stuart Kenny? Again, an amazing man, an amazing businessman. He said something quite unusual. He said that gambling could get a stench like cigarettes if issues aren't dealt with. Interesting to hear a founder of a company such as Paddy Power coming out with a statement like this, Stephen.
Yeah, and I suppose it just reflects the concern he has about this whole issue. So it's a good story from Aaron Rogan. He's saying that Paddy Power Betfair has closed down more than 200,000 accounts belonging to problem gamblers in recent weeks. And, you know, the company, he's writing, is becoming increasingly concerned about the reputational damage addiction is causing. And you mentioned there Stuart Kenny, he's talked to Aaron Rogan and he's saying that unless firm steps are taken to make the product less addictive, the gambling industry is in danger of getting a stench like cigarettes. So, you know, he's come out really strong on
this.
But
just to say that again, 200,000 is a staggering figure.
It really struck me as well.
Of accounts to be closed because of problem gamblers. Like, that is unbelievable.
It is,
like,
and that's only in the last few weeks as well. Yeah. So who knows, you know, in a whole year how many they are closing down. And you might think, you know, from these companies' perspectives, obviously they are bringing in the money, these problem gamblers, but it just reflects that, you know, especially with more regulation coming down the tracks, that they are becoming concerned that they could be hit with big fines and, you know, tougher penalties if they don't get ahead of the game on this and take action. And you mentioned Stuart Kenny, you know, the co-founder and the former chief executive, and he is concerned that, you know, this company that he founded and that he built up, the reputation could take a big hit if they don't get ahead on this.
A few other bits in that same article, though, Stephen, seem to be at odds with that.
Yeah.
Is that not the case?
Yeah, so this investigation has found that so-called VIP managers, who it's basically their job to encourage customers to bet more, they are also in charge of responsible gambling initiatives.
That doesn't make sense.
It doesn't seem to, yeah. Anyway. And they mentioned one incident where a customer was given free bets by one of these VIP managers despite triggering the warning systems in place to spot signs of addiction. So it seems that maybe in every case, you know, these so-called VIP managers have a bit of a conflicted job title where on one hand they're trying to, you know, encourage these problem gamblers to bet more, but also then being tasked with, you know, setting up initiatives to try and crack down on it. So it doesn't seem to make sense in that regard. And Stuart Kenny, just Aaron Rogan, has a longer piece on page 11. He has called in the past for measures to be introduced to force customers to limit the amount they can lose in a single session. So maybe we might see these companies looking
very
at that
interesting
kind of thing.
Story. Finally then, Grainne, a bit of reflection. We chose to go to the moon. It's on the front page of the Irish Independent, and it's an excerpt from US President John F. Kennedy's speech about the, and there's some really, really, I just read it this morning, some really powerful words in there.
There are, and you forget about how important an orator John F. Kennedy was. When you read it, you can actually hear how he would deliver it, that kind of strength. And I think it's a very strong part of the piece as well, that even though we're, you know, 50 years on, a lot of the quotes still have resonance. So, you know, he talks about, you know, the space and science, nuclear science and technology has no conscience of its own. And sure, look, we all know the problems with the technology at the moment. He says, if the whether these forces will be for good or for ill depends on where the United States occupies its position in this, you know, will it be a terrifying theater of war? It's interesting to see that they were conscious of that, especially after in those Cold War, kind of that Cold War era. He says, you know, the title of the piece, we chose to go to the moon. We chose to go to the moon in this decade and to do other things, not because they are easy, but because they are hard, because that goal will serve to organize and measure the best of our energies and skills.
Yeah, so fantastic stuff.
If you wonder why we're looking back at the moon landing, that's a great reason. You know, this is one of the best things, it's the best, the most positive efforts of mankind.
And also to think that those words were written 50 years ago is also amazing. I'd like to thank both my guests, Stephen Murphy, our own News Talk reporter here, and Grainne Nia, reporter with the Journal. Thanks very much for an intrinsic and forensic look at the front pages this morning.